Welcome to In His Footsteps with award-winning author Margaret Agard, sharing practical tips for living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Now here's Margaret.
Do you believe it's true that good news doesn't sell? Lisa of Tulane Living won't agree, and neither does Jerry of GoodNewsNetwork.org. You're going to be meeting both these women today, and $5 Mother's Day gifts. Unique.
Now here's this week's Bible question and answer, brought to you by the Amazing Bible Timeline. Quickly see 6,000 years of Bible and world history together on one color-coded wall poster. Find out more about the Amazing Bible Timeline or ask your own Bible question at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
The Bible question this week is, why aren't the dinosaurs in the Bible? Or are they? First of all, not everything that was created is in the Bible, but according to some scientists, the animals described in Job chapter 40 and chapter 41 could refer to dinosaurs. Chapter 40 talks about an animal called Behemoth, with a tail like a cedar, who was not afraid of a raging river. And while some people speculate that that could have been an elephant or a hippopotamus, a tail like a cedar doesn't describe the elephant, the tails of those animals. They are more like ropes. Leviathan is a sea monster. Some people again suggest that might have been a crocodile or a whale, but the Hebrew language has a word for crocodile or whale. So why would they have called it Leviathan? So there are two cases of animals that might be considered to be dinosaurs in the Bible. And in addition, while not everything that was created is mentioned in the Bible, everything that is mentioned in the Bible is in the correct order in which it was created. Okay. $5 unique Mother's Day gifts. I happen to be on the site Fiverr.com. That's Fiverr.com. And I just put in the search term Mother's Day. And up popped about 20 gifts of things people would make or do for your mother for Mother's Day. And I called one of them. Let's hear what he has to say. The point of Fiverr.com, of course, is that everything people offer to make or do costs, you got it, $5.
Good morning, this is Todd.
Todd, it's Margaret Agard with Radio Show.
Oh, hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. Todd, how long have you been doing Elvis impersonations?
Well, I've been doing Elvis about 13 years now.
And on Fiverr, you'll call not just for Mother's Day, but for any day?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I have something on there for calling for birthdays. I have something on there for calling anniversaries where I would sing Lovely Tender. And for Mother's Day, I would be calling and singing The Wonder of You.
The Wonder of You. So can you give us a few seconds of that, maybe 15 seconds?
Sure. When no one else can understand me, when everything I do is wrong, you give me hope and consolation. You give me strength to carry on. And you're always there to lend a hand in everything I do. That's the wonder of you.
Yeah, you got that resonance in there. That's good. That's good, Todd.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, so you can just get on Fiverr.com and look up Todd. Todd, how are you listed there?
Todd Elvis, or you can just look on there under Elvis and find me, you know, for happy birthday, for anniversaries, or for Mother's Day.
Great. Thanks, Todd. That was just one of the fun ones up there. A couple people will make videos with your own photos and put music, and one will be happy to write a poem for you. All right, good news. Jesus told us that as a man thinketh, so is he. If you spend all your time thinking about the bad and sad things that are going on, not only do we get more of the same in the world, that's who you become. That's why I like this website. This is what I go to every morning. It's how I start my day. GoodNewsNetwork.org. I wanted to know how Jerry came up with the idea. Can she make a living off of it? How does she do it? How long ago did you start the Good News Network?
I'm in my 15th year. I started in 1997.
When the internet was fairly new. And how did it start out?
I had always had the idea, since I was in the television news business in D.C., that there should be a good news show. I worked in television for 10 years, and then I started a family, left my career, started a family, and then the internet came along, and I thought, aha, this is one way I could actually do a good news compendium by making my own website. So I set it up in August of 97 and flicked the switch, and suddenly it was on worldwide, and I just kept adding good news to it all the time. And so it grew and grew and grew.
That's so fun. And then, yeah, we put our first website up in 1997, too. It's just fun to see how it grows. And now, have you always been the one who looks for all the news? When you started, was it basically you?
Yes, it was. And it's still basically me, although I have a lot of fans now who send me links to stories, and they also write stories for me sometimes. So that helps an awful lot, because there's a lot more sources now for good news. So,
did you ever suggest to the television stations you worked for that you should have a good news show?
Yes, my colleague said good news doesn't sell. And I never believed him. Although I've heard that many times from industry professionals. I never believed it, because at the time, the number one newspaper insert was Parade, and they always featured heroes. The number one magazine at the time, Reader's Digest, always had heroes on. The Oprah Winfrey Network had their Angel Network.
Right.
And I just didn't believe it. I thought, I bet you good news would sell. Well, I finally got to the point where I proved somewhat that it does sell, because after doing it for free for 10 years, I was trying to think of how could I earn a salary for myself. Because I didn't have time to really work the advertising angle.
Right.
So I polled my readers, and 70% of them said that they would pay something for my good news service. So I said, there you go. I'm gonna do that. So I started a pay what you want type payment plan, with the low price being $2 a month.
Okay.
And then starting in May 2008, I started charging for much of the good news. I still have a lot of free good news that goes out to the world.
The front page is free, but if you click for more detail or for backstory or whatever, then there's a subscription.
Well,
request.
There's actually a whole section of news articles that are free. It's called Most Popular.
Okay.
And all those stories are free. I post them on Facebook. I have over 20,000 fans on Facebook, and they all get those free stories. And there's a free newsletter, the top 10 good news of the week, that goes out. And those are the stories from the most popular section.
Okay, that makes sense.
And it's interesting to note that over 20% of the, around 25% of my subscribers choose to pay more. They don't get anything extra. They just choose to pay more because they value the service or they have more disposable income.
Yeah, and they want to support it. I like that. Yeah, I like that. So how's it changed your life?
Well, I have said in the past that the best thing about creating the website is how it sort of transformed me. The benefit of doing something you really are afraid of is immense. I like the author Carolyn Mace says, you know, do the thing that you really fear the most.
Right.
But I'm still
not going to bungee jump off a really high building. But go ahead. Yeah.
And changing the website into a membership site for money was definitely something I did not want to do, and I had a lot of fear around, as well as starting the website in the beginning. But it changed my it became a good news philosophy, not only just a business and a website and a news outlet. It became a philosophy. And when I was raising my three kids, I realized that you should look at the good in our everyday home life. You should look at the good and focus on the good instead of focusing on the negative. So I started doing that with the kids more and realizing that it's more important to look at what they're doing right than what they're doing wrong.
I've got that from reading One Minute Manager, which we just listened to with my husband. People are so afraid that if you don't point out what's bad, mm-hmm. that they won't give it up or something. And so we ignore what's good and focus on what they're not doing right. But that's perfect, Jerry. So that just this focus that you have in your life of focusing on good news you brought into your parenting.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting. I went to a positive psychology conference a couple weeks ago, and I found out the reason that good news does, I mean, that good news doesn't sell, so to speak, or why that people like bad news and they tend to, why newspapers put on sensational news or what have you, and why parents focus on the bad. It's this neurologist was speaking, and he said that bad news and being fearful about things is like Velcro. It sticks. And the good news is, and the having a good time is like Teflon in your mind and in your memory, because in the evolutionary times, it was more important for us to be afraid of what was in the bushes so it could keep us alive from the tiger that was lurking there.
Right. That makes sense.
At the end of the day, when we're like recounting our day, the negative things stick out more because of the way our brain is wired. But the good news is, and they've done studies, these are scientists speaking, that when you do start dwelling in the positive, where you, if you think about a story for 10, 20, or 30 seconds, or you dwell on the positive about your child for 20 seconds, that it starts to actually create pathways and masses in the brain that help you more to focus on the positive, and it changes your mental attitudes and it changes your brain.
Like digging a trench, like you're out there digging this good news trench so that you can choose to become a cheerful, happy person who sees all the good going on around you, is what you're saying?
Yes, and it does. The good news then later, it affects you more, it sticks to you more, it is more, and then it becomes more prevalent in your life, good. And there are studies that show then that optimism creates more successful employees. People are hired first if they're more optimistic, and they're more successful in their jobs, and you have less heart attacks and lung disease if you're optimistic. These are all scientifically proven things.
Because who wants to work with or for kind of a depressed, angry, look how bad things are person? We all want to follow the person who gives us hope and courage and encouragement.
And they're more optimistic. People are more open. They're able to see more possibilities. And, of course, they work better with their coworkers.
I know. That's something I'm working on now. Noticing when it's disagreement with my fundamental beliefs is upsetting to me. So to learn to be happy that someone disagrees with my fundamental beliefs, that's been a tough one for me. Have you noticed that? Or is that just me? I'll be talking with someone who completely disagrees with whatever my viewpoint is, whether it's Republican or Democrat, whether you think you should have more or less welfare, or what you should do about immigrants, whatever my stand on it. When someone takes the totally opposite view, I've noticed I can get very upset about that.
It's taking a larger view. And, you know, over the years, I became more empathetic to those people because I can understand. I mean, I personally am an avid liberal and an avid Democrat, but I can really understand. And interesting, when I go sometimes to campaigning things where we're talking to the public, the person next to me is more like you, or I know she argues with them and doesn't doesn't know how to empathize.
Right.
And I can really see their point of view on things. I don't know. Maybe that's part of the whole brain structure after being so positive for so many years. I don't know.
I'm going to spend even more time on your site. I love your site, Jerry. And I love the idea that it's going to get these things into my brain. People here in West Virginia sometimes have a hard time finding their own work. There's not a lot of work here, number one. Number two, a lot of people are retiring here, and they're in their 60s. You know, they have a good 20 years left. So you had some skills that you brought to this. And I guess that's the thought. How can you take your skills, or how did you think through this to say, here's what I want to do, and now I'm going to grab the chance?
Well, I guess, well, let's see, it was 97. I don't know how old I was. I guess I was coming up. Yeah, 45. Yeah. Well, I learned new skills. I remember I totally created the website from scratch myself. I researched what was the easiest software, easiest to learn. And then it came with a huge manual. And I read it and I learned the website myself and created it from the vision that I had in my head. So I think it's...
I'm impressed.
I think it's... Yeah, I mean, not very many people read large manuals for products.
Right.
And use it. But I was determined to learn how to create a HTML website. And now I do know. I'm a real geek now. I know a lot of stuff about...
So are you still maintaining it, or do you have someone else maintain it now?
Yes. Well, I do change the website every day. I update it every day, add the photos and all that. But I don't do the technical back. But the point is that older people, you know, in fact, a lot of groups of seniors around the country they have leaders in their little groups that share good news from my website. And the ones that they like the best are the old people who do something new and something different and exciting, step out of their comfort zones.
Think Colonel Sanders. I tell people I'm in the Colonel Sanders phase of my life.
When did he start his restaurant?
He started out with just a recipe. How old was he? He was 68. And he did that for, I think he was 74, 78 when he sold the idea of it, the chain of it. The first thing he did was simply sell the recipe. They built the chains later.
Mm.
Yeah. And he just took off in his car with his recipe.
And Grandma Moses didn't start painting until she was 80.
There you go.
So I think, yeah, people who are retired, they are in their golden years for sure. And I mean golden in terms of shiny, brand new. You can do anything you want to, just choose to do it. And with the internet now, oh my gosh, really celebrate that passion you've had your whole life.
And do something new. That's good for your brain. Learning something new actually helps to delay or prevent Alzheimer's or dementia.
The onset of dementia. It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so more good news. All right, Jerry, I do love your website, and we gave it to my mom for Mother's Day. I was so tired of her getting upset. She's too old to be getting worried and upset, because she was always listening to, I don't know, Rush Limbaugh or somebody. And the world is falling apart. Yeah. And I said, you got to stop that, Mom.
Yeah, it's bad for your blood pressure. My blood pressure is so great. It never goes up.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jerry.
Good for your mind, good for your moods, good for your spirit. Yeah.
Great. All right, great job. Okay.
Thank you very much.
If you've just tuned in, this is Margaret Agard with In His Footsteps. You just heard from Jerry, the founder of goodnewsnetwork.org. You know, there's a woman like Jerry right here in West Virginia. Lisa Minney, the founder of Tulane Living, for almost the same reason started that. Let's find out what Lisa has to say.
About 5 years ago, I was working as the only newspaper reporter in a small community, and I loved it a lot. But as time passed, you know, the responsibilities of covering negative topics that came up, murder, misconduct, politics, things like that, they really began taking a toll on me. I was having trouble sleeping, I was angry, I couldn't leave work at work, I was hardly ever home. So after some time, I began looking for jobs, writing jobs that were not in the news field, and interviewed for a couple magazine jobs that also seemed to include a lot of time and work. And I was talking about one opportunity with my husband, Frank, and he just looked at me and he said, if you're going to do all that work, why not just do it for yourself?
Good thought, and Frank, yeah. I'm a man after my own heart. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I looked at him, and it never occurred to me, and I said, are you serious? You know, and he said, well, of course I'm serious. And 2 months later, I quit my job, and 5 months after that, in September of 2007, we released our first issue.
Yeah. So when you got started, did you have to have startup funds? Or were you able to get advertisers right away? How'd you get going?
We were fortunate. You know, we had some startup funds, so we really didn't have to look for any outside sources of funding other than what we had to our own resources. And getting our first advertisers, you know, you just hit the pavement. I think we pretty much called in every favor and every network and every contact that we had at the time. you know, when we started, we were only in six counties and pretty much, you know, had a lifetime of contacts that we could work with from there, and then we just kept growing and could reach out to other businesses and you know, they've supported us. It was
Where are you now? How many counties do you cover now?
We're now in 16 counties. It grew much faster in the first year than we ever expected. Our first issue was 10,000 copies, and I had no idea if people would even read them or not, and within a week they were gone. So the second issue, we went to 12,000. Within the first year, we were at 14,000, and now we print 16,000 copies a month, 17,000 in the summer travel months.
How did you hope to make not just your life, but everybody else's lives better with this?
Well, to be honest, when we started, if the topics that are covered in Tulane Living were topics that Frank and I were interested in, and we had people in our network and in our friends that were teaching us. And when we launched the magazine, we believed, didn't know for sure, that other people would want to know and learn these things just as much as we did. And when Tulane Living came out, immediately it was obvious to us that there was a demand and people were interested in simplifying their lives and improving their health and growing their own food and becoming more self-sufficient. So now I think today we have 28 regular columnists, all of whom are volunteers. None of them are paid, but they're all passionate about their topic, and they all have things that they want to share with readers and other people. And
do you do any actual editing of those columns, Lisa, or do you just take it?
Not really. I don't give any assignments. I figure our columnists know more about their topic than I do. And I don't really...
Well, I sent you a copy of this story I had about ringing the bell for the Salvation Army. And
Right. The
little girl who put all her money in at the last minute. And
Yes.
Okay. And so I just said, you know, do you want this? And if someone else had maybe a touching story or something, would you want them to contact you? Or are you afraid that if I leave this in the show, you'll get too many?
Well, we have our readers page. So we always have space for small essays and photos and poetry and things like that. So we're always open. You know, we're not here just to teach our readers, but we're also here and hope to be a venue for and an outlet for writers in the state.
How about recipes?
Recipes, we accept recipes. Readers love recipes.
I have a friend who has turtle fricassee made out of snapping turtle. I know. When she went through the steps, I said, I'll just come eat some of yours. I'm not ever.
Right. Now, we have two ladies that write regular recipes columns. We got one we just started. She started this month. It's all of her recipes use self-rising flour. And then we've always had moms... recipes for mom since the time we launched. But
really?
Readers love
self-rising flour. Do you know how hard it is to get that particular brand that everybody loves, which now I've forgotten the name of it, that everybody makes their biscuits out of? In fact, we were in the store one day and we got the last bag. And as we were leaving the aisle, I'm not making this up, this little old lady, she looked like my mom, kind of bent over a little bit, was looking, and we had taken the last bag. That's what she was looking for. And we felt so bad, you know, that we gave her our bag. But
that was nice.
I know, but that isn't nice. That, like, it's hard to find that. So I don't know that hysteria on the self-rising flower will work, because then we really won't be able to find any. Although, yeah. Tell me what you hear from people, why they like it.
One of the common things that we've heard is that people, they like having something that they can read that's not negative.
Right.
People find comfort in it. A lot of people say they remember, it reminds them of something, you know, that they remember from their youth. With the younger generation, they find it empowering. A lot of them are, you know, they're wanting to learn to be self-reliant, and they like learning how to garden. And
you know, I was just reading an article. Actually, one of the women was writing and said when she was a young mom, she sure wished that the women, the way they talk about in Titus, about reaching out, the older women should reach out and help the younger women learn these things. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't realize how much they want it, how much they want to know. Like you said, you had people who were already teaching you. What kinds of things were they teaching you that were your first columnists?
One of the things that we were learning, of course, at that time, I had a lady who she taught me how to get, raise, and deal with our chickens. I'd never had chickens. I had never done any canning. I had never, you know, I had a small piddly garden, you know, to get maybe 8 tomatoes out of the season. But, you know, they taught me how to can, taught me how to sew, taught me how to dehydrate.
All the things that people used to learn when they lived on the farm and in a house where they did that, but don't anymore.
Yeah, common, practical, common sense things that many of us really have no idea how to do.
And I think sometimes, this is what I've noticed, when we get together and we're doing this as a group where we're teaching the younger women how to do that stuff, is we have time to chat, and then we talk about other things, like my 2-year-old is doing this, and my husband says these things, and we're like, okay, that's normal. Like, you did not get the only... How are you making it, and how is it affecting your life? Is it making your life more stressful or as less stress as you hoped? Or
I was surprised to find that one of the hardest adjustments for me was, you know, kicking down a gear and finding I could, you know, I can sit at a desk and I can assess every task that needs to be done on that desk, but I found myself a little bit challenged when it came to dealing with the garden, dealing with the chicken. You know, I had to find that farm routine, which is very busy, again, and I don't mean to say that it's not a lot of work and it's not a lot of hard work, but I just wasn't in tune to responding
to the
farm.
You know, I'm going to do the laundry on Wednesday, and
on Wednesday the well goes, or you know, you can't hang your clothes on the line, or
and guess
you,
what?
You can't schedule the farm.
That's right.
The farm schedules you, so that was a very hard adjustment for me.
Yeah,
and I was surprised by that. I thought, oh, this is going to be wonderful, and I'm going to, you know, kick back and be a gardener and make my own bread, and I found it challenging because I'm not in control. The weather and...
Right, to learn to be happy, not being in charge.
Right. That's the other part, learning to be happy and finding those little joys in the simple things.
Good point. Train yourself to find the joy in the little things, to find the good news. That's the key to a happy life.
You can find out more about how to have the joy that comes from living each day for God while still keeping up with daily life in the book, In His Footsteps, How to Be Happy in Every Situation, available at the website inhisfootsteps.com or online at amazon.com.
You can get more information on our guests and our discussion today, including replays of this show, at inhisfootsteps.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duck, West Virginia 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews with people who do.